The Fan on Demand.
We're going to play only requests for all the bumpers.
Can I make a request for next week?
No, you have to wait till Tuesday.
Okay.
Next Tuesday, and you got to either email us or you can tweet me.
Tweet this.
Tweet this.
He explained.
What is it you want?
Tedeschi Trucks. You ever hear Tedeschi Trucks?
Nope.
Outstanding. Susan Tedeschi sings.
Is that a song or a band?
It's a band. Derek Trucks is the guitar player. He's a hell of a guitar player. It's kind of an offshoot of the old Allman Brothers. And, you know, the Allman Brothers has morphed over the years. And the guitar player is the nephew of the original Allman Brothers drummer. And he's a hell of a guitar player. And she can sing the snap out of a blues song. She is really good. So there you are. That's my request for next week.
And the band is?
Tedeschi Trucks.
Tedeschi Trucks.
Okay. Yep. Good stuff.
Alrighty then. I don't know. Can we find it?
Yeah.
It's out there?
I even have it on let's get this right, my iPod.
You have an iPod?
I have an iPod.
I am too old for an iPod.
I'm in the 90s now. I don't have an iPad, but I have an iPod.
Oh, I got iPad. Well, I don't have it. My family has it. We have three
of
them.
This is the one with music, right? That's the
iPod is the one with music. The little 15-inch screen or whatever it is.
No, that's too much.
Well, I don't know anything about it either.
That's too much like work.
As I said, I have three of them. Two of them I won at golf tournaments or was given at golf tournaments. And the other, we might have bought one. And other members of the family have absconded with them.
Yeah.
You know, my daughter does all her schoolwork now on an iPad.
Yeah, I believe it.
She doesn't have a pencil, a pen, or a piece of paper when she goes to class.
How does she give autographs?
She can't.
Wow.
She doesn't know how to write. Like cursive.
You mean like cursive?
Does not know how to write.
Yeah, see, but that can't be good in the long run.
I don't understand how that can be good.
No, can't be good in the long run.
Now, having said that, when's the last time you wrote something out longhand? Other than your name on a check or whatever.
You mean like a grocery list? Or I still write checks. I still write checks. You know, charity checks, things like that.
Yeah, but don't you print those? No?
Sometimes,
you write them out?
Yeah.
See, I print my check.
I have a pretty legible scrawl, so.
Yeah, I print the check and then sign it. Mm. But I'm trying to think of the last time I actually wrote anything like.
Birthday card? Greeting cards?
Yeah, maybe.
Christmas cards?
Yeah, maybe, even that, you know.
Yeah.
Merry Christmas. Screw off.
Most of the time Scrooge. You're playing thumb hockey, right? With your machine. Like sending.
Well, I'm not real good at that either.
No, neither am I. I'm not a good thumb typist.
How's your typing in general, given that you...
Two-finger guy. I was always a two-finger
typist. Yeah, me too.
Old-time two-finger.
Never really learned how to type.
No. No,
that's interesting. You know, 40 years in the business.
Yeah.
40 years every day banging something out.
Two fingers at the end.
And never learned. Never.
And I could get up to 50 words a minute. Two
I have
fingers.
No idea what that means.
I could type fast. Pretty well. But
you were never inclined to go and take typing lessons?
No. I just.
Didn't intrigue you?
You get sitting at the little wee keyboard, which is made for, you know, 5-foot secretaries. And
Yeah.
Hands never seem to fit the keyboard too well.
So, like, we have an interesting history because some people won't know this, but Perk and I went to the same high school.
Yep.
We're like a year apart, two years apart, something like that.
No, 1 year.
One year.
Many, many moons ago.
Didn't know each other really well.
No, played one of the same teams, but...
Otherwise?
You were in the golf team, I wasn't. You were on the curling team, if I remember, and I wasn't.
I was.
We both played football. But that was it. I was in the political end of it.
So how did you get from high school to a writing career? Did you know you wanted to do it?
Yeah, well, I actually wanted to do this. I wanted to do radio or TV. And I applied to Ryerson when I was a kid for radio and television arts.
Coming out of high school?
Yeah, when I was 17.
Oh, yeah.
And the guy called me in for an interview. and at Ryerson. I even forget who it was. And the guy said, we talked a little. He says, can I level with you? And I said, sure. He says, you don't have the looks for TV or the voice for radio. Go into print. Which, I mean, imagine as a 17-year-old, if you said that now, there'd be lawsuits.
Oh, yeah.
I didn't want to hear
it. Is he still alive?
I can't even remember.
I'll sue on your behalf.
I went home and thought about it, and I thought, well, he probably knows. So I enrolled in print. And
at Ryerson?
Yeah, and it worked out great. 40 years later, you know, I had 40 years in the business and went around the world and went to all kinds of wonderful things and had a terrific career. So the guy did me a huge favor. Now I'm doing more of this.
So you come out. So see,
I still don't have the looks for TV or the voice for radio.
He didn't know Jack. So so you come out of Ryerson.
Yeah.
You're still pretty much a kid.
Yeah, I was 19.
19 out of Ryerson?
Well, I was 19. I was working at the Globe and Mail while I was going to Ryerson.
Oh, yeah? How'd you get that job?
Well, because the Globe and Mail used to call and say, send down 6 of your third-year people for a tryout, what they call a tryout.
Okay.
And so I went down to the Globe and as one of 6. And it was right at the height of Watergate. And I was working on the foreign desk at the Globe and Mail. And that day, that afternoon at school, I had been writing my little editorial for the Eye-Opener, or for the Ryersonian, the daily paper at Ryerson.
Right.
And I'd had to look up about, you know, how the U.S. system works, the legislative branch, the judicial branch, all this stuff, to write this, you know, ridiculous little editorial about, you know, Richard Nixon's bad or something like that. So that night I went in and sat in the Globe copy desk, and in came this long-winded Washington Post story on the wire, you know, long sheafs and sheafs of newsprint. And the two desk guys were talking about it, and I said, oh, no, what happens is the legislative branch has to do such and such, and then they pass it over to the executive, and then the attorney general has to do blah, 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 because I'd researched it 3 hours earlier. And they looked at me and said, you do it. And they tossed all this copy to me, a green 19-year-old kid.
Wow.
And I, you know, with scissors and paste, and you edited a story.
Yeah.
And put it together, and the managing editor came out and said, who put the story together? And I thought, oh, here we go. I'm a dead man. And I go, wee, you know. And he said, well, that's, he said, that's very good. He said, I can understand it. And all the ins and outs. So they said, come on back next week. And that was it.
And you were employed?
Yeah. I never stopped working.
So what was your first official job then at that point? The next week you come back, and what's your title?
And then I kept working on the copy desk.
On the copy desk?
And I worked, and that was in September. And I worked for 2 months on the copy desk, and at the end, and partway during October, there was a baseball headline in the paper. I was a big baseball fan. It said something about Oakland A's, but the headline was messed up. And in the old days at the Globe, the first edition of the paper would come up, and everybody would go out for dinner, you know, and have their dinner. And when you came back from dinner, the first editions would be sitting there. Well, I'm a broke college kid, so I'm bringing in, you know, egg salad sandwiches and sitting there for an hour because I had nowhere to go. And the paper comes up, and there's this, what they call a bad headline, and it was something about the Oakland A's in a playoff series. And I went, I didn't even know where the sports department was. So I went marching down a hallway and knocking on doors, said, is this the sports department? And finally, there's a big old room with Jim Vipon, sports editor of the Globe Mail, sitting there with his feet up, smoking a cigar. And I said, is this the sports department? He said, what do you want, kid? And I said, well, excuse me, but I think this headline's bad. And he jumps up swearing, and I turned and ran. And I ran back to the foreign desk, and I sat down, and I'm saying, I know it's wrong. But I'm thinking, you know, I've screwed up now. And half an hour later, Vipon come out, and he's looking around, and he says, are you the kid who, I said, yeah, you know, he says, well, thank you very much. He says, I don't know how we could have done that. That was a bad thing, and we were able to replate and blah, blah, blah. And I said, oh. And he says, who are you? And I said, well, I'm a Ryerson guy. And he says, do you like sports? I said, yeah. He says, well, how long are you working here? I said, well, for the rest of this week. He says, next week, come work for me. I said, okay.
Wow.
And I worked every night for 6 months. Seriously. Like, I worked 6 nights a week for 6 months.
But you wanted to write. So you're on the copy desk and you're editing. And
well, you know how I started? I started as the sports agate man on the weekend. In those days...
You should explain agate to
everything's
people.
computerized now, but in those days, the scoreboard page, you know, where all your hockey summaries are and your baseball standings and your football standings, it was all done by hand. And you had to keep it. And when a game ended, you by hand added, you know, 2 points for win and 5 goals for and 3 goals against and all that. And then you send it down to the composing room. They'd set that line and type and then assemble a standing. So I did all the agate. I did all the hockey summaries and standings and everything. I did that for a couple of months.
But you want to write.
Yeah. They
That's
finally,
what you want to do.
They gave me an assignment, and it was to go out and write a promo on Bobby Hull and the Winnipeg Jets coming in to play the Toronto Toros. First story I ever did.
Wow.
Yeah, just a kid, and I go out, and I'm like 19 years old, and Bobby Hull.
Then you go to practice?
Yeah, he went to practice, and then I kind of, you know, I kind of go up, excuse me, you know, Mr. Hull, and, you know, he couldn't have been nicer, you know, what's your name, son, and, you know, put his arm around me, walked me around, interviewed, you know, introduced me to the coach, and it was just great. And I wrote some ridiculous story, and that was it. That was the first byline I ever had.
How long at the Globe Mail?
4.5 years.
And then the Star comes calling?
Yeah, in 77. So then 36 years at the Star.
Now that's the year the Blue Jays arrived. Was that
when the Jays arrived?
Accidental or deliberate?
No, no. When the Jays arrived, I was at the Globe.
Oh, okay.
I actually went to the first game, but I didn't work there. I just, you know, big baseball fan, so I got tickets. And, of course, in those days, you could get real good tickets. I was 3 rows behind the dugout, you know, just by being part of the newspaper. So, what happened was the Star
Right, because R. Howard Webster.
R. Howard Webster owned the team.
Owned 40%?
I think he owned
45. No, he owned 45, yeah, Labatt owned 45, and CIBC owned 10.
Owned 10, that's right, yeah.
Right.
And that was it. No, I went to the Star because they had added a Sunday Star, and they'd gone from 6 days a week to 7 days a week.
Wow, that was then, huh?
And that was in...
Seems like we've had a Sunday Star forever.
A little before that. Yeah, it was a little before that, but they needed more bodies. So I went and worked there as the overnight editor, midnight till 6 in the morning, till 7 in the morning.
How was that?
I was the overnight sports editor, putting together all the pages. That was fun. It was good.
Got all the West Coast games?
Yeah, did everything. You know, it laid out the pages and picked the photographs and wrote the headlines and wrote the cut lines. And
did you write much during that period?
I did a lot of horse racing, kind of freelance, yeah. I covered a lot of horse racing on freelance. I'd go to the track in the afternoon or the evening before coming to work and write little stories and sell them to myself, you know.
Yeah, well, but back then, horse racing
coverage in the paper.
There was a lot of coverage.
Yeah, a lot more than now. Now there's
like you had a full page of horse racing.
Full page of horse racing.
You had the form,
the entries,
the entries, and the results.
And
but then you always had a story or two.
Always had a news story, and
yeah. Now was Holly writing then?
Yeah, Sandy was around in those days. Sure, that was where I got away with one of my worst insults in history.
Go ahead.
Was a horse racing thing.
Tell me.
I don't think I can get in trouble for this anymore, but there was a jockey club trustee who was the grandson of Baron von Richthofen, who was, you know, the...
Really?
Yeah, and he was the right, you know, I don't know, he was some kind of royalty of some kind, but he was a von Richthofen, and he played the part. He was a stuffy kind of guy, when all the jockey club guys were stuffy kind of guys.
Yeah, they were.
And this guy was really annoying, and I had said that he was fresh from his new $1 haircut, and I went dash 25 cents a corner dash, and blah blah blah. That got in. So there was all kinds of hell to pay over that one.
Did you ever get sued?
Never got sued.
Never.
Never got sued.
That's too bad.
I never got arrested.
Everybody should.
I never got sued. Everybody should get sued. There was threats.
Well, I don't know about arresting. I mean, I never aspired to be arrested.
No, but you
but getting
always,
sued is sort of a stamp
of
like you've arrived.
You know, I used to have a lot of people call and threaten.
Yeah.
But, you know.
Nothing ever happened.
The threat of lawsuits, well, you know what it's like, the threat of lawsuits. You say, okay, well, let's see what the see what the paper says when it arrives, but it never seemed to arrive. I got lucky.
Huh. Isn't that interesting? Well, so there's your history.
So there's the long history.
I didn't intend to go down that route.
Well, that's all right.
By the way, we're not on TV today, just so you know.
So there you are. Well,
so
that's
Perk
good.
And I can put our feet up, take our pants off if we want. We can sit here in our underwear.
Wait a minute.
We can do whatever we want.
Yeah.
This is like the old days. You know, I spent like 20 years, more than 20 years, 30 years doing radio, real radio.
Strictly radio, yeah.
Yeah. And been doing this TV simulcast thing for so long now, you kind of forget.
Now, the first time they ever put your radio show on TV, what did you think? Did you think it was the beginning of something bright, new, and exciting? Or did you think
it was idea.
An experiment?
It was my idea.
It was your idea.
Well, I stole it, but none of the other guys at the station at the time had the idea. In fact, I've told the story before. Early 90s, I'm in Vegas because I used to go and I'd live there for the wintertime.
Well, I remember, yeah.
Well, I lived there full-time in the 80s, but I used to go and live there in the wintertime.
Right.
And I'm an insomniac. And so I wake up. Like 4 o'clock in the morning, and I'm wide awake, and I know I'm not going to go back to sleep, so I just got up, went downstairs to the family room, grabbed the remote, click, click. It's 4 a.m,
yeah. Right?
Vegas time.
Right.
Click, 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 and I get to MSNBC, which had not been around long. It was a fledgling network, maybe a year or two. And they're simulcasting the Don Imus show.
Oh, Imus, yeah.
From WFAN.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
Now, Imus didn't do sports.
Right.
He did principally politics.
Yep.
But it was on the sports station, WFAN. And I'm watching this, and I've been in radio, you know, now for 20 years or so. And I'm fascinated by this. And I thought, well, if I'm fascinated and compelled by watching this, and I've done this for 20 right. years, there's something here. And the next morning, I wake up deliberately to watch the simulcast again. And this keeps happening over and over again. I'm now at the point where I'm watching this thing every day. And I just made a mental note that this is the future is simulcasting radio on television. It's the ultimate eavesdropping.
Yeah.
It's the kid looking through the knothole in the outfield fence at the baseball game. Mm. Or remember they used to have those, who is the artist who used to have the guy who used to peek over the fence and all you saw were the fingers and the eyes?
Oh, yeah, yeah, yeah. Kilroy was here.
Kilroy.
Yeah.
So, and I thought, this is this. That's what this is. Mm. You're not, it's radio. You're not supposed to see radio. You're not supposed to hear it. But I'm fascinated by it. And if I'm fascinated by it, and I actually know what it, because I've done it for 20 years.
You know how it works, yeah.
I know how it works. What about people who don't?
Mm-hmm.
And so when I came back and my next contract came up, there was a clause in the contract that said, we control the the rights to replay, blah, 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 this, that, and simulcast. And you know, for radio, TV, print, this, internet. And I scratched out the TV. And the lawyers put it back in, and I scratched it out again. And so finally we had a meeting, and I said, no, I mean, I think someday there's a chance this thing may be simulcast. And I don't want you to have the rights to it. I should get something for that. And so every year I used to do one-year contracts. And every year I'd have to scratch it out, and every year the lawyers would put it back in, and I have to go through the same rigmarole. And it was about 10 years later. So 10 years I went through this whole process, and nothing happened. And then finally they came and said, hey, you want to simulcast? We're going to simulcast the show.
And at that point, you had the rights.
Well, essentially.
Yeah.
Yeah, I didn't really have the rights. They just didn't have the rights. So it also put a few dollars in my pocket.
You're kidding.
Hard to believe, but.
Really?
Yeah. Later in the program, Michael Boone of the Montreal Gazette will join us. Jeffrey Kessler is a sports labor lawyer. He filed a lawsuit against the NCAA on behalf of a group of college basketball and football players arguing that the association has unlawfully capped player compensation at the value of an athletic scholarship. We'll talk to him about that. Dr. Glenn Fleissig is with the American Sports Medicine Institute. I don't know if you buy this or not. They conducted a study. They followed 500 pitchers for 10 years, starting at age 12. And their conclusion is that pitchers are overworked at a young age.
I would believe that.
See, I'm not buying into that. I think that pitchers are babied and coddled, and that's why they're getting hurt.
By overworked, I think that means, what it means to me is, they're throwing pitches they shouldn't be throwing, i.e. curveballs.
Okay, I would agree with that.
They should throw fastballs and changeups and nothing else.
Nothing else. Nothing that creates torque.
16, 17, at least.
Right.
In my opinion.
I'm sorry? Oh, thank you very much. Charles Farrell, former boxing promoter, will be with us. And Paul Maurice, Winnipeg Jets head coach, one of our favorite people.
Just got extended.
4-year contract extension.
Good for him.
Good.
Good man.
For him. Put your headset on. We got a guest. Nick Stauskas, Mississauga native, announced yesterday he is going to declare, or has declared, in fact, for the upcoming NBA draft. He forfeits his junior and senior seasons at Michigan. And Nick joins us on the phone. Hi, Nick. How are you?
I'm doing very well. How you doing?
Great. Congratulations, first of all, on not only a pretty solid season, but a great, if abbreviated, career at Michigan. I want to talk to you off the top because there's lots of speculation as to your decision. Not that it's a big surprise, but both you and Glenn Robinson both declare for the draft. If Robinson hadn't, would you have, or the other way around? Tell me what the thought process was for you.
I think regardless of Glenn's decision, I probably would have ended up declaring anyways. I just think that at this time I was ready to make that jump. And, I don't know about Glenn's decision. You know, if I stayed, I don't know if he would have still went. But, you know, I just felt like I was ready. This is something I've been dreaming about my whole life. And I just felt like this is the right time to make that jump.
Who did you talk to in making that decision? I assume this isn't something that you just sat in your dorm room and kind of conjured up by yourself. I would assume you talked to parents, friends, somebody you trust. Who did you talk to?
It was really just my parents and my coaches. Those are the people that I really trusted with this situation. And, my coaches did a great job of providing me with the right information. And, they've been through this process before with other players. So, they told me what I had to do, what I had to look for. And, my parents supported me through everything as well.
Nick, I know the NBA has always been on your radar at some point. Was it moved up a little bit because of your success in college?
Yeah, no doubt. Like I said, playing NBA has always been a dream of mine. And, this year with the season I had, I just felt like this is the perfect time for me to make that move there. And, I couldn't be more excited to have this journey right now.
Was basketball always number one for you growing up?
Yeah, no doubt. There was never really any other sport that I had a lot of interest in, I think, from day one. I played soccer when I was about 5 or 6. And then I moved on to basketball when I was about 7 years old. And from there on out, it was only basketball for me.
How does basketball come into your life? How are you first introduced to the game?
I was first introduced by my uncle. He's actually Lithuanian. I'm Lithuanian as well. And he started up a Lithuanian club team. And he just invited me to play and a bunch of other kids that he knew. I had never played before, so I was doing it for fun, and I just fell in love with the game really early.
How old were you when you started?
I was 7 years old.
Were you playing like biddy ball with a smaller ball and a lower basket?
Yeah, it was. The basket was about 8 feet.
Right.
And we used a smaller ball. So, it was a lot of fun. I just enjoyed it from early on, and it was a hobby at first, and then it became something that I took really seriously after.
Nick, before we start, thinking about you as an NBA player, let's talk a little bit about the tournament that just went by, the NCAA tournament. You had a couple of good games for Michigan, but just talk about that whole experience front to back.
The NCAA tournament is just a unique situation just because, you lose one game and you're out. So you got to take every game very seriously. And, last year with the run we made to the Final Four, we had a lot of fun doing that. Obviously we hope we could have done that again this year. And like you said, we had some great games, and we came one shot and a couple of seconds shy of making it to the Final Four again.
Did you play better in this year's tournament than last year's?
Yeah, for sure. You know, I think last year's tournament, I really had one good game. I think that was the Elite Eight against Florida. And then, you know, this year I felt like I was definitely a lot more consistent and steady throughout the whole tournament.
What was the fundamental difference in the difference between your freshman year and your junior year, or freshman year and sophomore year, in terms of your own performance?
I think just consistency and mental toughness. You know, I think my freshman year I used to get down on myself very quickly if I missed a few shots, and I think this year, you know, with my team needing me to lead a little bit more, I think I just did a good job of staying calm no matter what was going on, whether I was having a great game or a bad game. So. I think just that mindset of coming in and thinking everything's going to be all right regardless of what's going on, that really helped me as far as consistency goes.
We know you're a great shooter. You've always been a great shooter. We know about the basketball mini courts you've got in the backyard. Once the summer rolls around and you get out there playing, how many times will you shoot in a day on a normal day?
You know, it really just depends. It really just depends on the day, I guess. You know, I try to aim for around possibly like 500, something like that.
You're like the Vijay Singh of basketball here.
Vijay Singh's a golfer, right?
Right.
Yeah, he is.
He just hits balls forever.
For hours and hours.
Hours on end.
Yeah, no, repetition is key in any sport. So, you know, I get that.
Do you have, I mean, look, you can't choose where you're going to go. But growing up, who was your team? Who was your NBA team?
You know, I'm a huge LeBron fan. So first it was the Cavs, and then when he moved to the Heat, it was the Heat. So I've always been a LeBron follower.
So you didn't like the decision much, is that it?
No, I mean, to be honest, I kind of wish he stayed in Cleveland. You know, there was a part of me that was upset when he moved to Miami, but you know, that's his life and that was his decision, I guess.
Sure. Now that you're kind of more or less no longer a college student, what do you think about the whole idea now of college athletes being paid for their services? It's big in the news, as you know.
You know, I think obviously it'd be great. It would be great if college students could get paid. You know, because obviously the scholarship that the athletes receive is, you know, it's nice. They don't have to pay for school. They get a free education. But at the same time, just, you know, I feel like a lot of college athletes, you know, they need a little bit of spending money, whether that's, you know, to buy food, go to the movies, or, you know, just do normal things that kids like to do. So, you know, I think it would be great if at some point the NCAA could find a way to, you know, perhaps get players money for jersey sales or, you know, just, you know, mini salaries that we could receive. But obviously that's not up to the players. It's going to be up to the NCAA to figure that out.
Did you have a part-time job while you were at Michigan?
I did not, no.
Did many of the players on the team have?
No, I mean, during season, there's just no way you could have any time to actually work a job. So none of the players really work.
You've got a, what are your plans as far as school are concerned? Do you have intention to try and get a degree somewhere down the road?
Yeah, 100%. You know, I promised my mom that at one point or another, I would finish school and I'd get a degree. And, you know, obviously I've completed 2 years here at Michigan and, you know, hopefully, you know, one day when basketball is done or when I have some free time, I can finish things up here.
What's your major?
I'm still undecided on my major. And, you know, that's another thing. I feel like, you know, school will mean a lot more to me once I'm done playing, because I think I'll have a better idea of what I want to do with my life after basketball. And I feel like it'll be easier for me, you know, to really pick what I want to study and be interested in that.
What, do you have any thoughts, anything that crossed your mind? I mean, I know you haven't made a decision yet, but usually we waver.
You know, sociology is interested me. Communications is interested me. I've taken some sports management classes.
Right.
You know, things of that nature that I think, you know, I'd be good at and, you know, I could take an interest in.
Not to get too far ahead of ourselves here, but you know what the future of Canada basketball has been internationally, and at some point, you know, we're looking for this country to make a pretty good run at the Olympics. Does that ever just, you know, park itself in your mind somewhere in a back corner?
Yeah, for sure. I think, you know, with the guys coming out of Canada right now, we you know, we grew up as friends and we played against each other and with each other, so we definitely all think about it, you know, getting together and making this thing work, because I feel like we could, you know, we could be very competitive on the world stage and, you know, hopefully bring home a medal if we did compete in the Olympics.
cooler than Math Club and almost as cool as Chess Club. The Fan Club. Log on to Sportsnet590.ca.
But Michael Boone of the Montreal Gazette joins us. Hello, Booney. How are you?
Hey, Bob. Doing well. How are you?
Quest for the Cup is... Nobody's talking Stanley Cup in Montreal, are they? They're talking like, you know, let's win a couple rounds, maybe?
Yeah. Quest for getting out of the first round.
Yeah.
Describes it more accurately.
You know? Yeah, and it won't be easy. I mean, this is a Tampa team that has, you know, they've got some firepower. They can play.
Yeah, and they play kind of a similar style to the Canadians. I don't think we're going to see the Rock'em, Sock'em type of series that you might against Boston or Philadelphia or Ottawa last year. I don't think the Canadians will be run out of the rink physically, but they may be skated out of the rink. Tampa is fast. They're good. They're well-coached. Pretty good hockey team. Amazing how quickly they rebuilt, actually. I'm impressed by that.
Thomas Vanek, is he... Well, let me ask you, before I ask you that, what is... I mean, having watched them night after night, what has, in your opinion, has Vanek meant to the Montreal Canadiens?
He gave them a bona fide, outstanding, and well-balanced first line. What's impressed me about him, in addition to his scoring, like we all knew he was a scorer, but he is a real physical presence. He's not afraid to go to the net and park himself there and use his body intelligently in that situation. And he's a hell of a passer. Hell of a passer. He spent the most of the last regular season game against the Rangers desperately trying to get Max Pacioretty a 40th goal. I mean, he was giving up scoring opportunities in order to do so. He's been a revelation. You know, I'm not a close follower of either the Buffalo Sabres or the New York Islanders. I always knew, you know, he was a pretty good player. He's an outstanding player, or at least he's appeared that way in his time with the Canadiens.
Mark?
Mike, how much lament is there in Montreal about the Canadiens essentially blowing the home ice advantage for this series? I mean, it looked for a long time like they had it.
Yeah, I think that the key was that game that they lost to the Islanders.
Right.
You know, their destiny was in their hands, and they lost 2-0 to what was essentially an American Hockey League / OHL team, and that was a bit disappointing. But I don't know that home ice will be crucial in this series. It's not, you know, the Tampa Bay, I don't even know what the rink's called down there, but it's not exactly the House of Pain, hey? It's not an intimidating locale. And the Canadians had home ice advantage against Ottawa last year for all the good it did them. Yeah. So, you know, you go on the road, maybe you steal one. Can be 5 or a game 7, but I don't think it's going to make the difference this time around.
Are Montreal fans optimistic about this series?
It's hard to get a read on them. I think most fans in Montreal are astonished that the team got 100 points this year. You know, and at the beginning of the season, everybody would have been delighted if they made the playoffs. Coming out off kind of a disappointing playoff series last year against Ottawa, and then a summer in which the marquee free agent signing was Danny Briere. And, you know, we didn't know quite what to expect. So we're kind of playing with house money at this stage.
Right.
Yeah. But I don't, you know, we're not setting out our prime spots on the parade route by any stretch of the imagination.
It's hard to, with Michael Boone of the Montreal Gazette, it's hard to imagine a team winning in the playoffs without good goaltending. You may be able, certainly you want great goaltending, but you need at least good goaltending. How good enough is this team good enough that if Carey Price isn't spectacular, is just good, can they win? Are they good enough to overcome Carey Price not being perfect?
Not over the long term in the playoffs. He's got to be spectacular. And, you know, we're used to him being spectacular. They wouldn't have made the playoffs if he wasn't great this year.
Yeah.
Because there were nights when they were outshot by pretty much a 2-1 margin. And we're not talking, you know, shots is a bit misleading. We're talking gilt-edge scoring chances, beautiful looks, guys wide open in the slot. They had problems on the back end, and then Price has had to be absolutely superhuman.
The other thing I was wondering, what happened to the power play? They didn't score a power play goal for the last couple of weeks.
Dave, I think it coincided with a mysterious decline in P.K. Subban's game. Yeah. He's not firing his rockets from the point. He's not doing a lot of things that made P.K. Subban great heading into the Olympic break. He hasn't been the same player since. You would think with Vanek there would be a better down-low presence as opposed to relying on Subban and Andre Markov at the points, but it hasn't worked out. You know, I'm kind of hoping it's cyclical, and if they pop one or two, it'll come around again, because certainly the talent is there. But it hasn't been clicking. They're riding something like 0 for 25 or 0 for 28 over an eight-game span. It's just it's become a pop-gun power play.
So, but is nothing with Subban that's health-related that you're aware?
Not anyone in town. I mean, it doesn't look like he's slower. It doesn't look like he's favoring anything.
Right.
Maybe he's thinking about the contract. Maybe he's thinking about the fact that he's his coach's favorite whipping boy. He commits transgressions early in the first period, spends the rest of the period on the bench. How many Norris Trophy winners spend the first period on the bench after one error?
Not many.
There have been games where he's played, 17 and 18 minutes. I don't understand how they're handling him, really. And I think they're going to blow it. I think unless they're careful or unless they know something that I don't about handling a great talent, he's going to be out of here. Maybe someone will make him an offer sheet, or if he signs, he'll sign short-term and dance his way out of town. Because can you imagine him in Toronto, you guys? I mean, this guy, he'd own the city.
Yeah.
With his talent, his charisma, and,
And he doesn't own the city in Montreal?
He's popular in Montreal, but I think to own the city in Montreal, you still have to be a francophone. The demographics are still significant. I can't emphasize enough that he's loved.
Right.
Especially when he's putting on one of his shows that we haven't seen for years in Montreal. We like a little hair down here, a little showbiz, and he delivers that every night. But absolutely beloved at the level of a Guy Lafleur or something. Maybe not quite. But it's early in his career.
Yeah.
You never know.
Two quick ones.
The demographics of the fans are changing, so.
Yeah. Two quick ones before we go. Number one, who wins the series?
I think Tampa Bay is going to win the series off what I saw this year in the games between the two teams. Your show is, nobody can hear it in Montreal, right?
Unfortunately. Yeah, you can. But second question, chances that Vanek stays?
Oh, boy. Maybe it. They would need a really deep run in which he had the time of his life, because there's a lot of factors at work. He went to school in Minnesota. His
right.
wife is from there. His kids are coming up to school age, which is always problematic in Montreal.
Right.
Yeah, it's a long shot that he would stay, really. Now, I have a question for you all.
You got to go real fast, 30 seconds.
Okay. Is everyone in Toronto putting aside their blue and white pom-poms and getting behind Canada's team?
Yes.
No.
Okay. That's what I was expecting.